This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The DFS Studio is brought to you by DraftKings. The Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Welcome in. It's the divisional round. It's Friday, January 19th on the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Borgannoni, and I am joined, as always, by Matthew. I'm freezing my butt off, Betts.
It's cold, man. Winter's here. I know it's cold where you are, especially, but it's funny. We were talking before we started recording and you're like, man, it's like 16 degrees here. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, that's really cold. And then I remembered guys played football last weekend in like negative 27 wind chill. And we're still catching the ball, running around. Actually listened to the Kelsey podcast this week and Travis was talking about it. He was like, dude, he's like, I couldn't even like feel my fingers out there. So, suck it up, Kyle. You'll be all right.
I hear that I'm soft. I'm soft when I like sitting at home and curling up near the fire. Good read. You got any off-season reads going on yet?
Dude, I don't have any yet, but I need to get one, you know, on the books here, so to speak. No pun intended. So maybe after we're done, we can let everyone know in Discord what the first book club event is of the off-season.
Yes, that is something that Betts and I have teased. I had someone the other day reach out to me and say, hey, what's the off-season book? What's the reading list? And I've got a couple that I think I want to introduce. I'll probably give four or five, but Betsy and I will hone in on one. That's like, hey, statistical analysis, you know, overarching, how do you understand probabilities? We've done one on the logic of sports betting. So yeah, hey, what better time to figure out this is what maybe could happen half the time when I watch football and then guess half the time too. That's what we're doing.
It's the best.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. So yeah, we're not quite in off-season mode yet because we still have a couple more weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. So a couple more weeks here on the DFS and Betting Podcast. I'm excited to talk about divisional round. Only four games, so I feel a little bit more condensed in my thoughts. The best plays are the best plays. We could say the name Christian McCaffrey and then log out of this podcast. And I feel like people would do pretty well.
It's so crazy, man. Like, I was like trying to, you know, research some stuff to put in the article on the site. And I was like, at this point, like, you guys know, just play Christian McCaffrey. He's cheaper than he's been all year, basically. And on the slate, he's clearly RB1. He might even be RB2 and RB3 when you look at the other guys that are playing on the slate. So he looks incredible.
He's the best player on planet Earth. Yeah, he's going to be great for the slate. If you want to vote for us, this is our last chance. This is your last call. Our prices could never be lower than they are now for the DFS pass. And also, if you want to go to footclanvote.com and vote for this podcast for the best fantasy and sports betting podcast. Betts and I don't really like promote this a ton on social media. We're not trying to just gain a ton of votes. We're trying to get people that actually listen to this podcast. Isn't that crazy? People that listen to your podcast that like it and then want to vote for it. That's really the formula we're going for. But last chance, that will be added up, I think, in a week. So on the sports podcast group awards, and we're just hoping that maybe maybe we could take this thing down and we could hold it over Andy, Mike, and Jason. I feel like people have gotten a lot of value of what we've done. Got a great community over at Discord if you want to be a part of ballersdiscord.com. Still got some discussions about lineups, about props. I mean, we've been talking NBA props again. So yeah, great community, great group. DFSPass.com, it is still free. I thought that maybe they'd jack up the prices for the last like 2 or 3 weeks, but corporate had a meeting. And I feel like the next step from free is going to be us having to pay for people to get it.
Like, hey, Kyle, Betts, every time someone gets this free DFS pass, we're going to take $10 out of your paycheck. And before you know it, Kyle's kids aren't going to college. So that's how you help support the show. Support the brand is stealing from Kyle.
Yeah, my wife's going to be like, hey, I feel like you've been pushing from an early age that you're like, you want our kids to go to trade school and you just want them to forego college. Like, is that just something that's in your heart? And I'm just going to have to tell her, like, there's nothing left. All I have is DK crowns in my account.
Dude, you get enough of those over the years, you know, maybe you can buy a textbook.
Maybe. It's rough in the streets out there. It's just, okay, weather is one of those casual things that you talk to, but it is so cold here that I find myself huddled up in this room. There's also, I don't know if you have this, is there certain rooms in your house that are just warmer than others?
Do you have that? Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Definitely.
The warmest room is the downstairs bathroom in my house. And I mean like that.
If you guys want to know where Kyle is going to be building his lineups this weekend, right there.
I'm telling you, I do not mind spending time in there. The heater's right by my feet too. So I don't know if you guys feel that way too, but the other day I discovered it. I was like, I got to huddle up in here. I'm going to make it through the winter because of this bathroom. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Any overarching thoughts you have, Betts, about this slate? We're going to go through each game by game. The Saturday games is Houston at Baltimore. Baltimore is a 9-point favorite. Then it's Green Bay at San Francisco. That game's over 50 right now. And then on Sunday, it's Tampa Bay, Detroit in the Dome. Make that very clear. It's indoors. Todd Bowles was very clear. The game is inside. And that game's, you know, close to a 50-point total as well. And then we get the Chiefs and the Bills, which in the past has been very kind to us on this podcast, very kind to you. The 4-touchdown Gabe Davis game. We've seen Chiefs and Buffalo's game, Chiefs and Bills games. This one's a little different. The total's only at 45 right now. So any overarching thoughts about these four games?
I just think in general, like, it should be an awesome weekend of football. I think a lot of people around the league consider this to be the best weekend of football that exists. You have, you know, the 2-1 seeds obviously are in it. You have some really fun stories on both sides from the AFC and NFC. And you've got really good quarterback play in these contests. So it should be a ton of fun just to watch as an NFL fan. From a DFS perspective, it's sort of interesting because we have two games with a huge spread. -9 for Baltimore, -9.5 as of our recording for the Niners taking on the Packers. Historically, teams with these kind of extended rest periods, these the bye when you get the 1 seed, they haven't done great against the spread in this round. So I think there might be some edge in trying to figure out which of these teams can hang around, whether it's the Texans, whether it's the Packers, whether it's the Bucks. Doesn't fit that example specifically, but if those teams can hang around, you could see a really fun back and forth affair. So hopefully we can break that down today and kind of figure out which game is the game to go in on. And I will say on these small slates, you know, and we've talked about this in the past with the 2-game slates, shout out to DraftKings. I'm happy with them now. They can be back to being our sponsor. They did make the 4-game slate their main slate. There's most of their action is. On these smaller slates, you know, sometimes people think they have to get exposure to every single game environment. Sometimes if one game goes nuts and the rest just kind of dud, if you have, you know, 3 or 4, maybe even more pieces from that one game, you can get home. So trying to figure out which game that is on the slate, I think is going to be really, really important.
Right. And when you look at the salaries, which if you want to go on our site, we have them by points per dollar. I also have a first look article that has everything organized, DraftKings salaries, FanDuel salaries. We usually would take our strategy and say, pay down at these positions. Don't worry about this until later. I looked at defense first and I thought, wow, defense is priced pretty bunched together. Usually we're paying 4K for the best defense on a slate where it's like the Ravens. Yes, they're the number one, you know, they're the highest priced defense, but I don't mind paying that at all with, as 9-point favorites with the Texans having the lowest team implied total. So there's just little things about this slate and the pricing, and that's something we talked about last week, but a lot of these players, we will say, we used to pay this salary for these guys, you know, during the regular season, but now look how cheap they are. You know, I talked about Travis Kelce last week. It's the cheapest he's been in like 5 years. CMC, he's cheaper than what we're usually paying. He was around $9,600 when we were in week 17. Now we're getting him a little bit cheaper. So the context of this playoff slate is not the exact same thing we were doing in the regular season. Betts and I mostly talk about this from a tournament perspective. We don't play a lot of cash. You can do that. And there are lots of high floor plays because these are the best teams in the league. But yeah, I just think that you have to think about this differently in the context of the player pool and who's in there. For instance, Amon-Ra is the wide receiver one. And usually we'd go like, oh, okay, well, that's pretty expensive. He's such a high floor, high ceiling play that paying his price is just nothing to me on the slate. Like, I don't even consider his salary at all. I think a more projection and raw numbers. So anything you want to add to that?
No, I think you said it well. I think the case in point is Amon-Ra St. Brown is 8,200 on DraftKings. Christian McCaffrey is 8,800. And even after Travis Kelce saw his first 10-target, you know, double-digit target game in forever, DraftKings lowered his salary by $100. So like when they have these small slates, they kind of, and both sides really, want to make it accessible for people to play in a fun way. And if they really did kind of put these guys at a price point where they had been all season or where they kind of deserve to be, it's tough to fit, you know, a lot of plays. You have to like jam in two or three punt guys, which no one wants to do on a slate like this where you're just hoping for like two targets for these guys that are, you know, the cheapest of the bunch. So that's why they're doing it the pricing wise. And I think it makes for an interesting discussion because like you said, it's all about context relative to the other players, not necessarily their historical performance, but that is of course a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I'm looking at the wide receivers right now. It's like, man, there's a lot of dudes in this high 3K range, a lot of Green Bay receivers all, you know, jumbled together. It's Romeo Dobbs at 5.6, Reed 5.2, Wicks 4.9, Watson 4.0. Like there's just so many guys in that range that usually we gravitate towards that and say, oh, well, here's a high floor player in cash. We're sorting them out a little differently because of the context of the salaries and how you're getting your lineups together. So make sure you actually look at projections, people, that you are comparing, and we'll walk through these games right now.
Stack Attack.
We're going to start with the Saturday games, and the first game we're going to talk about is the Houston Texans at the Baltimore Ravens. I was writing up about the Texans, and I said, if you're not rooting for this team, like, shame on you. I actually used a Shakespearean Romeo and Juliet quote, but that aside, my point was, you have to be rooting for this team. This is not a great matchup. We saw this matchup in week one, but those were like two different teams. So I kind of throw out any of those, you know, numbers we're looking at. But the Ravens are 9-point home favorites. The over-under is at 43.5, which is the lowest of the slate. And we talked about it. The Texans 17.3 team implied total is, I don't know, disrespectful for the way that they just played. Is that a right way to look at it?
I don't know if it's that or just respect for this Ravens defense, which they're the first team in the NFL to lead in sacks, points per game allowed, and takeaways in the same season. I mean, you look at some of the DVOA type stuff for the Ravens, like it's historic how good they are against teams in previous seasons. They've just been dominant on both sides of the ball. And I will say too, like, you know, when you think about this matchup previously, that was CJ Stroud's first start, period. Like, at this point, he's not really a rookie, right? He's playing an MVP caliber level. So I'm throwing that stuff out from the get-go, from the first matchup sort of standpoint. These teams are also very different in terms of how they played and the trust that they've shown in CJ Stroud to let him throw, how the Ravens are playing. So it's just different. But I think the team total and the spread is more of just a respect for this Ravens team, which quite frankly does look like a juggernaut.
The Texans, of all the playoff teams, they play at the fastest rate. So, you know, we're looking at them in terms of pace. This is a team that, although they're heavy underdogs, we know how they get there, right? It's a CJ Stroud double stack. Last week against Cleveland, they averaged over 8 yards per play if you just throw out the fourth quarter where they were, you know, essentially winning, you throw out those two drives. But on FanDuel, that's the only place I'm interested with CJ Stroud because he is the, let me get this right, QB8 and salary on this slate. And FanDuel, if you haven't noticed this, they adjust much more heavily to matchups rather than this is what they've done lately or just slightly adjusting players. So 7,200, a CJ Stroud double stack makes a ton of sense to me on FanDuel. I probably will have zero exposure on DraftKings. He's just not been good on the road, and you know how good this team is. So any takes on the Texans side?
Well, I just think from the start, you know, when we kind of talk about top down, CJ Stroud's, he's passed every test that has been thrown at him. So would we be surprised if it happens again? Maybe you would say yes to that question, but he's done it and he's proven it over and over again. I will say, just from like a feel standpoint, it kind of feels to me like the magic might run out in this spot. When you look at, you know, historically kind of what has happened over the last 2 months or so of the season, you mentioned the home road splits at on the road, 232 yards passing at home, almost 311 and 2.5 touchdowns per game. So when he's been on the road, he has struggled. You throw in the fact that this defense is awesome. You throw in the fact that CJ Stroud has not played a game outdoors or rather two games outdoors since November 1st, dude. Like it's halfway through January and this guy has not really played much on the road when it's been, you know, these kind of tough conditions. So it's really tough matchup, like you said, on DraftKings, where Brock Purdy's right in the same range, Baker Mayfield's cheaper. Like, I kind of just find it tough to get there. And you throw in the fact that this game as a whole has been bet down, I think, 2 full points since it opened. Other games have been bet up. It just doesn't look like a great spot to invest for me if you're going with, you know, a bunch of lineups. You can obviously throw a couple Stroud teams in there. But I think just from an overall standpoint of kind of where I want to put my money this weekend, it is not leaning into CJ Stroud at a high level.
Yeah, I think with this game, it's pretty simple. If you are going to use Stroud, it's just Stroud and Collins. If you want to throw in a third option, you can. But I don't think it's necessary. It's just so hard for me to figure out. Like, John Mechie is going to show up in a lot of optimals because he's 3,400 and he showed up last week with 68% of the snaps. I just can't play John Mechie. Sorry. It's just there doesn't seem like there's a ceiling there. I'll probably eat my words. But Nico Collins has been killing it this year, killing against zone coverage. His last five games with CJ Stroud, 7-for-104-1, 9-for-191-1, 7-for-80, 9-for-195-1, and 6-for-96-1. And actually in week one, he did have 11 targets against this team, where it was kind of a surprise, like, oh, well, what's Nico Collins doing? And so I think Nico makes a lot of sense on DraftKings at 7,100. He's really expensive on FanDuel at 8,700. So I'm not too, you know, into that. But any thoughts on him? And I just want to say Singletary is a good high floor play still, but in what projects to be a tough game for them, he's just nothing more than a contrarian play, and Stroud doesn't throw to the running back position.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing is that, you know, if he does have a tough time on the ground just from like a game script standpoint, if he only gets 11, 12, 13 carries, I mean, that could work if he falls in the end zone at his price point and the other guys happen to fail. But when you think about the game script as a 9-point underdog, 9.5 on some books, you know, and you don't get a huge ceiling catching the football, whereas like other guys on this slate, like McCaffrey, Gibbs, James Cook, like we've seen those guys have a huge ceiling catching the football. That just kind of draws me away from Singletary. Now, I will say it's clearly his backfield. We talked about that last week with the Damian Pierce thing. He's gone essentially. And Baltimore quietly has been vulnerable against the run, you know, in December, kind of at the back half of the year. 29th in success rate since week 13. They have allowed the 8th highest explosive run rate and the 3rd most yards before contact per attempt. So you can run on Baltimore a little bit. The issue is, does the game stay close enough for that to happen? I'm not so sure. So I was kind of into Singletary last week, just slate context and pricing and all that sort of stuff. I get it at his price. He feels like one of those guys that I definitely would like to be underweight on relative to the field. I think he's going to be pretty chalky just because you look at his price, especially on DraftKings, it's like, oh, I'll play him and CMC, or I'll play him and I'll spend up for Aaron Jones or whoever you want. But like, he kind of is the only dude in that 5K-ish range except for Gus Edwards.
What if I told you that in 7 of his last 8 games, he hasn't hit 20 DraftKings points?
Yeah, I'm not worried about him coming out and burying you, you know, so to speak. But hey, I thought Kate Otten couldn't do that either. And turns out he's Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, you're going to have to save. You don't have to use that on Singletary, but at least once this episode, you have to say, if he beats me, he beats me.
And then, I've got the guy.
Okay, good. Because right now we have a, Somebody out there, please keep count when Bet starts doing that, because it is one of my new favorite models out there.
It's 100% hit rate, Kyle. A couple years ago on Thanksgiving, it was Mac Jones and Nelson Aguilar. This past weekend, Kate Otten just took
the
me
boys.
Down. So
these are the true winners right here.
These are the guys. So as soon as I say that, get ready to hit the lock button on the optimizer and play that guy at a high level.
I hate rejoicing in your pain because you were first in a tournament. You and I were texting back and forth. You had a pretty good setup. And then later on, you're like, oh, I got third, which is still great, right? Like, it's still a good win.
It was awesome. But it was funny because, like, I didn't even consider this team because they were so far down. And I was like, oh, they've got Kate Otten left. Like, how are they going to do this? Kate Otten comes out for a career day, of course.
It brings me a little joy that it was Kate Otten. Like,
the gloveless man.
Yes.
Just taped up. So much heart. So much effort. You got to love it.
I'm not really interested in Dalton Schultz. We'll talk about the other tight ends in this slate. I just think that there's other guys that I like in game environments that could go off. So, yeah, it's like I'm going to play Collins, and that's really it. Let's go to the Baltimore side because their team implied total is fine. 26, it's really, really good. Lamar's been much better at home. I worry about this team because I've guessed wrong. Is this a Lamar week where I've gone overboard on Lamar skinny stacks, and then all of a sudden Gus Bus gets two touchdowns on the ground? Their correlation is negative, so don't play those two together. I wouldn't do that. I think I'm just trying to figure out what to do at tight end. Do we have any updates on Mark Andrews as of this recording Thursday afternoon?
Yeah, so he came back to a full practice on, I'm trying to get my days right because they're a day ahead, on Wednesday. And then today before practice, as we're recording this, Harbaugh had said that, you know, Mark is feeling good. He's got a good chance to play. We'll see what today brings. So I think technically right now we should still consider him questionable. Even if he plays, though, I would just be surprised if he gets a full allotment of snaps. And especially if they're up by two scores late in the game or something like that, like certainly he won't be out there, right? So I think Mark Andrews is a little thin this week, but I do think it has a kind of a trickle-down effect of what does that mean for likely? What does that mean for fringe guys like OBJ and Bateman? That's what I'm trying to figure out on the slate.
That's what I kind of like about this is if I knew that Andrews was out or limited, kind of like how like you knew Laporta wasn't 100% last week. And so you and I both like, hey, we're not playing this guy. We're not telling people to play this guy. I think it opens up stuff for the other guys. I mean, the Texans have struggled against outside wide receivers and over the last month. So when Lamar was really humming, that last month since week 14, the targets per route run are pretty close between the other wide receivers. Now, Rashad Bateman shows up as actually the highest, which scares me because Rashad Bateman's never a player I want to go for. But Odell Beckham is right there in yards per route run. And his thing this year has been, is he on the injury report or not? Right now, correct me if I'm wrong, injury guy, he's not showing up on the injury report.
He is not.
Okay. That model tells me, which has worked like two or three times this year, that I kind of like OBJ as a dart throw and somebody that you can play with Lamar Jackson if you want to stack.
Yeah, I like him too. And the thing about OBJ, and there's sort of, I think at this time of the year, like as you get smaller slates, you know, you have to kind of just take some shots when the math may not say it's the best play because it's a small slate, right? You don't have as many guys to pick from. But just from like a feel standpoint, doesn't it make sense that you have this veteran that's been around the NFL for so long, injuries for so long, like you kind of save them for these moments in the playoffs when it matters most? To me, that makes a lot of sense. And when you look at it, like Houston has given up some big plays, especially in the passing game over the course of the year. That's where OBJ has kind of gotten his shots. Right? When Zay Flowers has gotten volume, it hasn't always been downfield. It's kind of been these intermediate to short targets. They've used OBJ as their field stretcher. So yeah, you can talk me into a tournament to Odell Beckham as part of a Lamar stack. That makes a ton of sense to me. And I do think when you're looking for guys that are cheaper, that will be relatively lower rostered, he's one of the guys that stuck out to me. So I like OBJ quite a bit.
Yeah, and don't hear me. Like I like likely a lot. It's just that if Andrews is in, it's tough to have full confidence in it, but maybe they run more two tight end sets. The Texans, not good against tight end this year, 29th in scheduled adjusted points. So for me, if I am stacking this game, it's a Lamar Jackson skinny stack with Nico Collins on the other side.
I'm with you. No, do you have any interest in the running backs? I mean, I guess Gus on FanDuel is okay just because like if they get in the 2-yard line and he scores twice, kind of like Kareem Hunt last week, right? Like Kareem Hunt didn't have that good of a day, but he still finished with like 16 or 17 points. on FanDuel because touchdowns are all that matters, that would be okay to me, but it's kind of thin otherwise.
Yeah, he's a wipeout pick, meaning I would play him and nobody else from this game, thinking it hits the under, it's gross, he gets in the end zone twice, or you could play Gus and Nico and get out of here, or Gus in the Baltimore defense. I think that's totally fine. Okay.
Yep, makes sense.
Give me your Vegas pick.
Man, this is tough. 9 feels like it might be too many points, but I'm going to trust this Ravens team. I'm going to lay it with Baltimore.
So I wanted to come in here and just say Baltimore, they're going to crush. Man, I know I have the narrative of Baltimore in the playoffs the last couple of years. Just when they lost to Tennessee that one year, they were the one seed. I was crushed. I was like, why? How? That was Lamar's MVP year.
That was the Derrick Henry game, right? He went nuts.
Yes. And yeah, that just blew my mind because I thought this Ravens team was going to roll. So instead of going with the narrative, I'm going to go against it, and I will take the Ravens -9, like a fish, like a dummy.
Perfect.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Next game is the Saturday evening game. Green Bay Packers at the San Francisco 49ers. This is the matchup, you know, you're a 90s kid. You're like, all right, Favre, Steve Young. You know, there's some great matchups. Jeff Garcia eventually in there for the 49ers. The Terrell Owens game. I mean, there's some classic stuff here. And I'm sure other people are like, you guys are young. But like, yeah, good 90s teams. And now we get the best game of the week, at least from the over-under standpoint, is at 50.5. The Niners are now 9.5-point home favorites. Man, so we're obviously going to love the 49ers side. I do want to start talking about the Packers, though, because their offense has been incredible for not just last week, right? What would you say? Like the last 2 months, they have been unstoppable. And it's not just Jordan Love turning into, hey, I'm going to do some Aaron Rodgers throws here and there. They have so many different weapons. That's been a lot of the media attention. Young weapons. Look at all these guys. I do want to give us a round of applause for how we talked about Aaron Jones last week, because dude broke the slate. And I just want to say, I think I'm scared because I'm now 3-for-3 in my slate breaking running backs. It was Kyren, James Conner, now Aaron Jones. So we'll see if I can make it 4-for-4.
Don't let the kid get hot. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, thanks to you. I had a really nice week last week. I lock buttoned Aaron Jones without AJ Dillon last week. I just thought it was an incredible spot.
And you already forwarded the money to me?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. If they were going to hang around with Dallas, I thought it was because that they could get the ground game going, like you said, and then hit play action, which they did. And I think it's the same recipe this week, right? You mentioned how good the Packers have been since week 13. They're number one on offense in EPA per play. This has been the most efficient offense in football. So it's a ton of credit to Matt LaFleur, a ton of credit to Jordan Love, who's playing like an MVP caliber player, and these young weapons. But quietly, like, I know running backs don't matter, but like Aaron Jones matters to this team, right? If they can get the run game going and hit play action off of that, similar to what, you know, Kyle Shanahan and the Niners want to do on the other side, that's the key to me to the Packers staying close in this game. I do think Green Bay +9.5 is where I would lean if I was betting this line. I think 9.5 is too much for how good Green Bay has played. And we have another report of AJ Dillon probably not going to play this week. So it should be another heavy dose of Aaron Jones, assuming the game script can stay close. Now, where are you at with Jones this week? He was your dude last week. Are you in or out on Mr. Aaron Jones?
Spoiler alert. I might be taking his under later.
Oh, no.
Well, one, the line's pretty high, so we'll talk about that later. But Yes, everything from his game logs, everything that you've seen is he's getting the usage. So I can't really argue against, is he the dude? I can't argue against the setup. And it's just hard for me to take somebody that's a double digit dog and then say that they are going to be the key piece yet again. It's just hard to do that back to back to back. So the hardest part about reading the Packers is that I could tell you a story about six guys and that they could work and they could be in the optimal lineup. Jordan Love is very, very cheap. So at 6,200, he's in my tournament pool. I will be playing Jordan Love stacks. I don't think I have to play him with Aaron Jones this week because I just love other running backs in other spots. We already talked about CMC. He might be a lock button. Like, if you're in a large field and you want to get weird, I get it. But CMC, our notes are really clear. You should play the guy at 8,800. He's not fair. And this is a run funnel. You need to be playing him against a team that's 26 in rush DVOA. They allowed the seventh most rushing touchdowns. I just love CMC. So in that sense, I don't love playing two running backs in the same game, and I don't love playing him in this matchup. I do have interest in like Jaden Reed. I think that he's just solid and safe, and I think his price has gone down. Like at 5,200 is nothing on DraftKings. So I think that's what I like most on the Green Bay side.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you said you were going to stack up Jordan Love, I was hoping you could give me the key to the slate because this is like Kansas City part two, where it's like they've got seven dudes out there running routes and two tight ends. And it's like, how do you pick? Like Christian Watson came back, he ran eight routes. Luke Musgrave only ran eight routes again last week. It was six the week before, still had the huge bombs. Like he got there, but kind of fluky. Bo Melton ran routes. Obviously, Romeo Doubs had a great game. Jaden Reed literally goosed last week. So I don't know who to stack him with, and that's the key. But we've seen San Francisco give up some big plays, especially in the air. And, you know, since their last six games, that is, for San Francisco, I brought up play action. They've allowed the third highest yards per attempt against play action. So that's the key, is if Jones can get going, I expect Jordan Love to hit some big plays. I don't know who it's going to be, though, man. That's the tricky part. So I think the box score watchers will help keep Reed's roster percentage down after last week.
Yes.
But, man, it's going to be so frustrating if you play that stack or you play a Dobbs stack and all of a sudden it's like, okay, there goes Dontavian Wicks. Like, you know, so I just don't know how to play. That's the tricky thing.
Yes. And then you have to ask yourself, are any of these players necessary with four games? Like do I have to have, like last week you had to have Romeo Doubs, probably. You know, he was awesome. He was incredible. He leads this team, Romeo Doubs, in first read target share versus zone coverage. He has a 22% targets per out run versus zone coverage. But then you go to Jaden Reed, who leads the team with 2.4 yards per out run. It's just like you could pick a couple different guys. I think I can pretty much say Bo Melton is not in enough, and he won't be my player pool. Christian Watson is so tempting because he's one of those players who could catch a long bomb and he gets a couple and he's over the 100-yard bonus. So for me, if I'm playing the Packers side, I am playing with fire because I'm saying Jordan Love brings along two guys. Probably won't be playing the tight ends because I think the other guys on the slate have a higher ceiling, but it's Jordan Love with Jaden Reed and Doubs, or Reed and Watson, or Doubs and Wicks. Like that's the only way I think I could play it.
Yeah, makes sense to me. I'm not too interested in the tight ends either, especially when you consider the context. Like, we'll talk about George Kittle here just in 1 second, and we're going to talk about Travis Kelce later. You've got two guys here that I really think one of these guys is going to have a nice day. And if those guys come out and just win you the week at tight end and the other guys just get buried, you know, you're going to need them. So I plan to try to invest in Kittle and Kelce on this slate and mostly come in underweight or fade all the other options.
The Packers have had an elevated pass rate over the last 2.5 months. So to me, it's like I'm hoping for volume from Jordan Love. Their team has hit the over in six of their seven. So it's just leaning into the, I need 40 pass attempts against the 49ers. And they get there through the pass. So hard to project this team, but you have to be impressed with what they did last week. Let's go to the San Francisco side. You and I are all about Brock Nasty this week on DraftKings only. I feel like on FanDuel at 7,800, they just left him there and forgot about his price. So Brock Purdy is one of those guys that you just play him with CMC and then you pick the other option. So who do you like between Debo, Ayuk, and Kittle?
Man, that's the question of DFS every week, right? It's really tough, I think, to pick. And truthfully, I'm going to play a decent handful of lineups this week and have exposure to all these guys just because it is so tough to project. I will say, just in early runs looking at roster percentages, man, a guy like Debo on a four-game slate around 10% is almost too good to be true. So if that holds, I'm very interested in Debo just because we've seen him, you know, in these spots. We've seen him against heavy zone defenses really just go nuts. And that's kind of what this is on Green Bay. But I was talking about it with Kittle, like, you know, there's only a handful of tight ends you can play in the player pool. And if Mark Andrews is back to take some off of likely, like if Kelsey has an okay day but doesn't crush and Kittle comes out and has his, you know, classic 102, it's like, man, that feels like a spot that you want to take some shots in tournaments and just hope you get that. Obviously, we saw Jake Ferguson have that game last week. Now, yes, a lot of that was garbage time stuff, but still, even before that, was having a pretty good day. They've allowed 8.2 YPT, which is yards per target. Has Green Bay to tight ends. That's a pretty high mark. And it just feels like a game where you could see Kittle pop off for a big play. So I like George Kittle quite a bit. Obviously, the price makes sense too, only 5,200.
Debo and Ayuk is so hard for me because, you know, you can go through every single kind of split. Is it zone? Well, like, oh, Ayuk's crushing, but Debo's getting targeted more frequently. You know, since they've returned, Debo's getting targeted more frequently, but Ayuk's yards per out runner through the roof. Like, Ayuk this year, if we didn't have Tyreek Hill, Ayuk would be breaking a lot of other metrics and a lot of charts with yards per out run stuff. So,
third in the NFL this year.
Both of them are great. I can't really say anything. I will say from a game theory perspective, let's say that you want to play Brock Purdy and you want to bring two pass catchers and one of those isn't CMC. What do you need CMC to do to, quote, fail in DFS this week?
I mean, he has to have a game where he probably only goes for like 100 total yards and scores only once. And like 8,800, that's fine. But, you know, if a couple of the 6K guys have a really nice day and other wide receivers hit in a huge way, that may not be crucial. That's kind of what you're rooting for, I think, if you don't play McCaffrey.
Yeah, you're a terrible person because you're probably rooting for an injury. Don't do that. But I'm thinking, like, I set the bar at 16 points. If he gets less than 16 points, I think you can say that. Now, look through Christian McCaffrey's games, and I'm just going to tell you right now, that's not the majority of the time what happens.
You're not going to find any of those in there.
It's not very many. He had a spell where he had a couple of weeks where he was at like 13, but pretty, you know, full PPR site. Like he's untouchable. So I like Purdy, CMC, and then pick another one. We kind of are probably higher on Kittle than maybe what the field's going to do. He killed it against zone this year. So, I mean, that's what Green Bay does 73% of the time. So that's kind of my main take. Do you like Purdy more than Lamar?
It's tough because obviously the way that they get there is very different play styles. Where with Lamar, you're hoping for a huge day passing, but also maybe 50 yards and a score on the ground. Whereas with Brock Purdy, it's like, man, he has to get there efficiency wise. Now, dude, when all their guys have been healthy, Purdy, CMC, the wide receivers, and Kittle, when they've been on the field together, 7.5 yards per play. That is outlandish. Now they're at home. They have the 30-point implied team total, which we've talked about all the time. They can hit that easily. I think I do like him when you adjust for cost just a little bit more. I think the game environment's there. I like the chances of the Packers pushing back and keeping this game kind of going back and forth a little bit more than I do with the Ravens total, which I said has been bet down. So I think I lean Brock Purdy, especially when you consider the savings. But man, it's super close.
Yeah, on DraftKings, I prefer Purdy. On FanDuel, give me Lamar. I will take the over in this game, and you said you like the Packers plus 9.5.
Yeah, I think they can hang around for a bit.
All right, let's move on to Sunday. Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Detroit Lions. Lions are 6-point home favorites at Ford Field. The over-under is 48.5.
What's the weather?
The weather, you know, I did not get my degree in this, which is a lot of fantasy people do not get their degree in weather forecasting. Apparently this time of the year, they do know their stuff, but should be fine. Should be just air conditioned, cool, great.
Reporter, that was so bad, dude.
Oh, man. Detroit people, you got to be loving your life. I know we have some Detroit fans that listen in. I tweeted out some stuff, some love for them. And also, you get a freaking gift playing the Buccaneers, the easiest team left in the playoffs. So I do want to talk about the Buccaneers because you feel good for them. You love what Baker Mayfield's doing. The Lions, it's really clear. You throw on them. You don't run against them. And Baker is one of those guys that when he chucks it, you can have some explosive games and explosive games for Mike Evans. So I think you and I love Mike Evans, love what he can do against this team. We did see this matchup, though. This is in October. The Bucs lost 6-20 at home against these Lions, and they really couldn't get anything going. So I think the only way that I'm really interested in the Buccaneers side is Baker is super cheap on DraftKings. So he gets there with 20 plus points and the rest of the field just, you know, 3Xs, but doesn't go bonkers. And it's just a Baker, Mike Evans stack with Amon-Ra and maybe another guy on the Lions side to bring it back with.
Yeah, this feels like an awesome spot to just go right back to Mike Evans. I know a lot of people were on him on the 6-game slate, obviously against the Eagles, and on the showdown slate, had a huge pass, hit his hands and dropped it. I think he dropped two balls. One of them was going to be a touchdown. But you just go right back to it, and you look at what Puka Nacua just did last week against this team. This Lions pass defense, dude, like if it weren't for the Eagles, I feel like people would be giving them a lot harder of a time because they have been horrific. Over 9 yards per pass attempt over the last 2 months. Over 9 yards. Like, that is insane. And now you get Mike Evans, one of the best big play threats in the league. Love Mike Evans on the spot. Plan to get well overweight, especially considering the dome environment. And like you said, you know, the negative game script here, I think we should see a ton of pass attempts from Baker. Baker's also playing with confidence, man. He's played really well. I know that the matchup was easy against the Eagles the other night, but this matchup's easy too. And I think Baker can get there one way or the other, whether it's efficiency or with volume in a negative game script. But to me, it just goes right back to Mike Evans. Huge spot, I think, for him against this Lions secondary.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Evans leads the slate in air yard share, 40%. He's the dude. He's the only dude I'm really overweight on the Tampa Bay side. Like Rashad White, we've kind of sang the same song over and over and over again. Inefficient. He can get in the end zone. He can get 3 to 4 receptions. It can happen, but this is a terrible matchup. Detroit has just been awesome all year against running backs. Yeah, I just don't have a lot of interest. Do you think people will play Rashad White?
I do, because of the context of the slate where, like on DraftKings, you know, there's not that many guys you can play. And I think last week, too, was kind of another example of that. It's like, oh, Kyren Williams, the workload's been great. Like, there aren't that many running backs you can feel confident in. Let's play him. And, of course, he failed a little bit in that spot, too. Just kind of looking at, like, runs of kind of what I'm seeing. Like, Christian McCaffrey is definitely going to be the most popular guy for good reason. Then I think it's going to be Pacheco and then kind of a group of, like, three guys of, like, maybe Singletary, Rashad White, or James Cook next. But all those guys are going to be north of 20% on the slate. And, you know, it's only 4 games. So, like, it's not outlandish, but if I can come in underweight Rashad White in this weekend in tournaments, I'm going to try to do that somewhat aggressively. Truthfully, I might not even play him.
I probably won't. Lions are number one in rush DVOA, fourth in EPA per rush attempt, and in losses this year, White is averaging 12.3 rush attempts per game. We took an under earlier this week, like the smart people that we think we might be. Chris Godwin is fine, but he's kind of in that no man's land where at 6,300, 6,900 on FanDuel, I'm just not super interested. He's just not going to look super great in projections at that price point when there's cheaper guys, those Packer guys I mentioned in the 5K range. What do we do with Trey Palmer, David Moore, who just showed up out of nowhere last week? Any thoughts?
Yeah, what an interesting group this is, because Trey Palmer had been running as the wide receiver 3 for most of the year. Last week, he only ran a route on 33% of Baker's dropbacks. That was his lowest mark of the year. David Moore, on the other hand, 43% of the routes. That was his highest mark of the year. So I don't know if that was just a one-game thing where they thought the matchup was better for Moore or what have you, but there's a lot of uncertainty here, and I think they're both okay to take a shot on in a good matchup if you are going to go with a double stack with Baker. But, you know, both guys feel thin to me. I mean, you're hoping for like, what, 3 targets, 4 targets, and you're hoping that one of them happens to result in a big play, kind of like last week with both guys actually getting there on big plays. So it could happen, certainly, but both guys are thin, and I would just kind of let, you know, roster percentages dictate where I go. If someone's more popular than the other one, I just play the other guy.
Yeah, keep in mind that on the other side of this game, which we'll talk about the Lions in a second, but Jameson Williams, Josh Reynolds are at the same price point as these guys in the 3K range, and they're going to be much more popular. So you're kind of having to play that inner game theory and ask yourself, like, okay, so what does Trey Palmer or David Moore have to do to get there? I probably won't have much exposure to either, but being overweight, Mike Evans. And then any last thoughts on the GOAT, Kate Otten?
Oh, I'm broken. I'm a broken man after last week. So I need to reserve all Kate Otten takes. I don't know, man. He had six straight games of two or fewer catches before last week, before he ended me last week. The matchup's okay, obviously, like we said. I totally get it. But this feels like the type of player that as soon as you see a big game on national TV, when he hasn't played well, you know, recently, I would just like to be on the other side of it and just hope for the best.
What if I told you that this is now, yep, looking at his salaries, the most expensive that Kate Otten has been the entire year? Way to go, buddy. 3.5.
And coming with about 15% roster percentage, do I double down?
Oh, man. Yes, you should. I mean, you have somebody else, but I will not be playing Kate Otten this week. His salaries are hilarious, by the way, like 3.3, 3.1. They're just in the same exact $500 range. This just happens to be the most expensive. He has to do a lot to pay off. So Mike Evans is really the only one we like on that side. The Lions at home has been a theme that I feel like we've talked about all year. They control the clock a lot. So that's kind of what the Lions' MO is that they have the ball a ton. They run a ton of plays. And this year, if you invested in a Lion in any format, best ball, home leagues, they all got there. I tweeted this out, but like Goff, top 10 quarterback. Gibbs and Montgomery, top 12 in fantasy points per game. Amon-Ra, top 5. Sam Laporta, top 5. He's a tight end one. It's the first team to ever have all of those. Makes it a little difficult projecting one game at a time because you look at this and you'd say, could David Montgomery get in the end zone? Yeah, he's always a threat to do that. But is he enough to really get there in a game? Like to give you 20 plus points on DraftKings? That's really hard. So, Amon-Ra is just really easy to look at and to say he's the best wide receiver on this slate and we're even going to factor in salary. So he should be a priority play for you. It's really hard for me to see him bust. It's another question if he's in the optimal, but he's just a high floor play. And then I have to move on from there and say, like, where else do I go? Is it a Jared Goff double stack where I'm with Amon-Ra and one other piece? Is that what you would do?
I think so. And what you're saying there in this situation is that it's kind of a similar matchup on both sides. Like the way that you beat the Lions is you throw the football. The way you usually beat Tampa is through the air. And so at home with Jared Goff, this is a spot where if he can be kept clean against the blitz, which Todd Bowles is going to blitz, and they have a plan for it, he can have success. Now, he's kind of just been a guy when he's off, you know, his timing's off or whatever, like he struggled, but clean environment at home. I think Ben Johnson knows what he's doing, man. Unlike the Eagles' incompetent offense on Monday night, that they literally had zero plan for the blitz. Ben Johnson is going to be ready for this and put his guys in position to succeed. I think you're going to see a ton of Amon-Ra in this spot, which I think a lot of people know that by now. And then the other spot I'm looking to get into with the Bucks pass or the Lions passing game, excuse me. Last week it was a big Josh Reynolds week for me, but I think it is a JMO week, man. I think we go back to JMO. It didn't feel right going there last week when everyone was so confident he was definitely going to be the guy. But now the field has flipped and I'm seeing like the same roster percentage for both guys. But the way that you beat the Bucks is deep passes. And that's where Jameson Williams historically has been successful. So if I am going to take a shot on a second guy, for me, it's Amon-Ra with Jameson Williams.
Yeah, I feel like Josh Reynolds feels like a trap if he's going to be 25, 30%. I'm just going to go with the player with just the bigger upside, just the better talent. It feels like a stupid thing to say, though, too. It's one game. Anything can happen, people. Yeah. I did have a question about the running backs because I'm lower on Montgomery, but he saw 56% of the snaps. Gibbs' snaps were down, but his snaps kind of are irrelevant. It's like a data point, but he's so efficient. That's all we care about, and he gets the passing work. I don't know what people are going to do because often when we see two running backs, we just say, I'm not going to play them in the field. You see the roster percentages go down a ton. Gibbs, I'm looking at our site, and then I usually take about three or four others just to compare, like, okay, are we off? I'm seeing Gibbs numbers all over the map with roster percentage. Some as low as like 5%, which is way too low. I'm seeing some at 25%. That's way too high. So any thoughts on Gibbs from like a game theory playing him?
Well, I think when you look at the pricing, you know, it's like you've got Jahmyr Gibbs at 6,600. Aaron Jones is right there at 6,700. Rashad White, 6,500. David Montgomery, 6,100. And James Cook, 6,300. Like, they're all right there. Isaiah Pacheco as well. They're all the same price. So I do think someone in this group sees the roster percentage come down significantly. And I'm going to try to keep my, you know, what's the saying, Kyle? Keep my ears to the grindstone or something like that. Is that a thing?
Your eye on the ball?
No.
Your
no,
nose?
No. There's a saying out there.
Your ear to the ground. I don't know what it is.
Maybe that's what it is. I'm going to try to figure that out, who that guy is going to be, because it feels like a good spot to take a shot in tournaments with Jahmyr Gibbs. If he is going to be, like you said, 10% or lower, man, what this guy can do with the ball in his hands is crazy. So, yeah, he'd be the guy I'd be trying to take shots on.
Keep your head on a swivel, put your hand in the dirt, you know, all those things.
All the things.
Right, like, or in baseball, when, like, your coach would be like, all right, ready? And then everybody would be like, ready? And you, like, get in your, like, fielding stance, like, you're ready before every single play.
I found it. Your nose to the grindstone. That's the saying.
Why do people do that?
It says to keep your nose to the grindstone is to apply yourself conscientiously to your work. That's the definition.
It sounds super dangerous, actually.
It doesn't sound great.
What profession does this?
I don't know.
Like blacksmiths?
I just Googled it.
Hmm. All right. Well, if I see a grindstone, I know what to do. Put my nose on it. I will definitely do that. Yeah, the Lions are a team that I feel like at home you just trust, and you trust that they're just a better team than the Lions, or a better team than the Buccaneers. I did want to throw out a little love for Sam Laporta, because Dan Campbell came out last week, said, you know what, he's not 100%, and that makes a lot of sense. Like, he didn't play full route, snap, like his knee injury. He's still, if you just think of pass catchers, okay, and that's what I love to do with tight ends. Like, okay, you know, I might look at Kittle, I might look at Kelsey and look at other guys on the slate, but like just pass catchers, his 23% targets per out run is a top 10 number. Like, he's a top 10 wide receiver on the slate still. And I think that Tampa Bay has just been terrible all year. Since week 8, they're dead last in schedule adjusted points to the tight end position. So I think he might get lost in the mix. I'm seeing some really, really low numbers for him. So if you wanted to do Goff, Amon-Ra, Sam Laporta, Mike Evans, and say this is the game that goes off, Sam Laporta gets in the end zone, and at 5,900, that's a solid price. 6,600 on FanDuel, I'm fine with that too. Then I think you're getting away from Josh Reynolds and Jameson Williams, who are going to be much more popular.
Yeah, those guys are going to be, I think, somewhat chalky. So that's an interesting way to play it, is just try not to play that price range and go with a little bit more of a balanced build to avoid a stars and scrubs approach. Makes sense just from a game theory and construction standpoint.
Yeah, I approached this slate and I was like, okay, who is the dart throw wide receiver you need? And I was looking at roster percentages. I'm like, well, I think the field thinks that Reynolds and Jameson are really good plays, or, you know, maybe they like Dontavian Wicks. You know, they pick a Packers wide receiver. What if the answer
is Shakir?
Yeah, Shakir is going to be popular too. What if the answer is none of them? And the construction isn't a bunch of 3K wide receivers. It's instead, you know, having a more balanced build that you look in a different direction. So keep that in mind. Give me your Vegas take.
Tough, man. I kind of went back and forth. I think at 6, I would take the Lions. I've seen some 6.5s out there, which I do think kind of is important. I'm gonna take the Lions -6. They keep it rolling. They win another game.
Part of me just wants to take the over, because I think 48.5 is a really good number to take the over with. I mean, Tampa Bay is such a boom bust team. I mentioned earlier, they scored 6 points against these Lions earlier in the year, and Baker's just one of those dudes that it would not surprise us if we're talking about this next week and we're like, well, Baker, you know, he got himself a contract, but, like, you know, he's not going to lead this team any further. But I also could be eating my words. So yeah, I think I would take the over and just believe that the Lions are just going to press on the gas.
Love it.
All right, last game. And this is a great NFL game, Kansas City Chiefs at the Buffalo Bills. The Bills are 3-point home favorites. The over-under is at 45. Betts, I went back. Since Josh Allen became the quarterback of the Bills, and this is now the 7th matchup between these two teams if you include the playoffs, the over-unders of those games were 55, 55, 55! 56.5, 54.5, 54, and then earlier this year in week 14, it was at 49, and now it's at 45. So this ain't the same Chiefs-Bills that we've seen in the past. And honestly, this is the first time that they have played in Buffalo in this matchup since 2020. And this is the first road playoff game for Patrick Mahomes in his career, which is a wild stat. And you're going to see that thrown around. But it's still just crazy that this guy's played in the league for as long as he has, his first road playoff game.
Crazy, man. He's so good.
So, pace-wise, I'm a little worried about this game because Buffalo plays way slower than you think. I mean, just, you think this is like a high-flying attack. Like, Josh Allen, although, like, he led the league in 20-plus yard attempts, he had his lowest passing yards per game this year. And this team has kind of shifted. You know, with Joe Brady, it's been a team that has had success, but the way they've had success is on the ground. They rank 28th in seconds per play at home. They run the ball 34 times a game at home. That's the second most in the NFL. So the Buffalo side, we used to just say, okay, give me a Josh Allen double stack or give me Allen and Diggs, and it doesn't feel so automatic. So the thing I feel most confident in this game is Josh Allen running the ball and James Cook running the ball. And from there, I think there's a lot of question marks.
For sure. I'm with you. This game does feel like an underspot to me where, you know, like you said, the total isn't as high as it usually is. You also have two teams that just don't play the way that they used to. When you think about those Bills and Chiefs matchups in the past, it was huge plays with Gabe Davis, huge plays with Tyreek Hill. And obviously, you know, Gabe Davis injured, we'll see, probably not going to play. And on the other side, you have no one you can trust outside of Rashee Rice or Kelce. And we've seen the offensive game plan just be different. Mahomes' ADOT is a little bit lower. We're seeing a ton more Isaiah Pacheco. I think we're going to see a ton of James Cook. So I do agree that like the clock is going to keep going. You have both quarterbacks that can extend the play with their legs, keep first downs going. So I think we're going to see both teams sustain drives and therefore the clock move a ton. I see the game total coming under. So even though it is the headline of the week, it's, you know, it's Chiefs, it's Bills, everyone's excited about Mahomes versus Josh Allen, I'm going to probably not have a ton of interest in this game stack, especially on the Buffalo side, where, like, dude, Steph Diggs is the man. He's so good. But the way that they're using him right now is not good for fantasy. And the way that they've been winning is not good for fantasy.
A good way to say it.
So if he beats me, he beats me, Kyle. I don't think I'm going to play Steph Diggs. And you and I don't get too stuck in the weeds on wide receiver cornerback stuff, but Le'Veon Sneed has played like an all pro this year. He's been awesome. And so my concern is like, if he takes away Diggs and Josh Allen's being Superman out there running the ball, like, are Khalil Shakir and the two tight ends like good enough to win in a huge way against this defense, which when their guys have been healthy, have been number one yards per play allowed. You also have an issue too with this Bills team was supposed to play Sunday, got moved to Monday. The Chiefs played Saturday. And I think that they probably knew that the Bills were going to beat the Steelers. Like, you have extra time to prepare if you're Andy Reid. I think the Chiefs win this game, or at least cover the field goal. I'm lower on the Bills than the market this week.
Yes, I'm with you in a lot of those stances because it's hard for me to look at Diggs, who's still being targeted on 28% of his routes since the OC change. They're just not deep targets. They're not valuable targets. His price is so tempting because we know that he can break the slate. It would not be shocking to me if he had eight catches for over 100 and a touchdown just because of just he's too good and there's not many wide receivers on the slate, to be honest, that can do that. However, I don't love the matchup, but I do love this for James Cook. Like when they played week 14, which you can use as a template if you want, but it's not the only thing, he went for 25 DraftKings points. You remember the next week after that is when he went for 39 DK points against the Cowboys, and he just lit it up. Like, Kansas City is a run funnel, so I think you're going to see more rushing attempts at home for Josh Allen, more for James Cook, and those are the players that I think we can have the most confidence in. So, to me, I wouldn't mind if I just stacked up Patrick Mahomes' side and just said Mahomes and Rice, or Mahomes and Kelce, and Cook on the other side. It's hard for me seeing this game being the back-and-forth, you know, game that you need. But I do think there's valuable enough pieces here that I think the field wants to play the other games, like the San Francisco game that's 50 total or the Dome game. I like individual pieces here more than the whole game environment.
Yeah, I like what you mentioned about James Cook. To me, he is the key piece in this game. for the Bills, just how, you know, they've been able to run the ball, and that's what they want to do. They're at home. You also think about on the other side, Chiefs have been somewhat vulnerable to running backs. And so that makes a lot of sense to me, especially on FanDuel. Dude, $6,800 is so cheap. If he scores at least once, like, he's probably paying that off, right? So I like James Cook quite a bit. On the Chiefs side, it's super clear, man. I mean, it's Rashee Rice and it's Travis Kelce and Isaiah Pacheco. It's like, those are the dudes. And you can take a shot if you want on one of these other guys. I'm really happy about the process of landing on, what's his name, Mecole Hardman last week. Turns out he's not that great at football with all of his targets. But he played more than I think a lot of the public was thinking he would. The issue is, I think Kadarius Toney probably comes back this week. Maybe Sky Moore for a handful of snaps and a target or two. So it's like, when you have that situation, you just don't know who to play. I'm going to keep it simple and just lean into Pacheco, Rice, and Kelce.
Pacheco, just to give you a stat, in four games without Jerick McKinnon, who's still on, he's on IR, right?
Yeah, he's not going to play this postseason.
Yeah. Pacheco's seen 59% of the team's red zone opportunities. That is the highest of any running back on this slate. That's better than CMC. So Pacheco is a fine bring back for me if you want to do Josh Allen and, you know, Diggs, or Josh Allen and Khalil Shakir, and then play Pacheco on the other side, or Rashee Rice. I'm fine with that. But let's talk about Kelce, because Kelce in this game could go off. I posted his splits against the Bills. They've been really good. And then playoff Kelce is a thing. We just got to ask ourselves, is this the same version at 34 years old? So do you like Kelce more than you think the field will?
I like Kelce a lot. I think, like I mentioned, kind of my strategy on this slate is to play one of Kelce or Kittle in most lineups. I think the playoff situation is important. I think it's real. Like, when the chips are down, they need a big play. I don't think he's going to MBS, man. I think he's going to Kelce or Rashee Rice. And when you look at this defense for the Bills, they are dealing with a ton of injuries that affect Travis Kelce directly. Linebacker injuries, safety injuries. We'll see on Tron Johnson. He was in concussion protocol, so we'll see if he can clear, but he lines up in the slot quite a bit for Buffalo too. So you have just so many injuries over the middle of the field. It makes sense to me, on paper at least, that this could be a big Kelce game. When you look at his last 10 playoff appearances, averaging 10.8 targets, 8.8 catches, and almost 100 yards per game. So I think that, yeah, when the chips are down, he's going to go to Kelce. He's going to go to Rashee Rice.
So we're, you know, in our best plays, we'll get to sort out these guys and where they fit in. I love Rashee Rice's price at that point. Like, I'm assuming that we like Rice more than Diggs this week, because they're pretty much right next to each other in price.
Yeah, I think somewhat easily, when you consider the defensive injuries for Buffalo. And granted, they've played through injury all year and they played well, but just how they're using Rice compared to how they're using Diggs, to me, is more fantasy friendly. And, you know, when you look at it too, like, I think it's fair to ask if at this point in their careers, like, Rashee Rice is ascending, Diggs is starting to get a little bit towards the tail end, right? So it's like, man, do you want to play the rising star or a guy who hasn't done it in weeks? And to me, I'd rather play the rising star.
All right, my last little question is about Khalil Shakir. He's going to be pretty popular at 3,800, and I get that. It's, you want a cheap piece, you want a part of this game, you throw him in there. He ran 28.9 routes last week. That was behind only Diggs. So I just worry that people are going to be in the same exact mindset of, I need to find the cheap receiver. Oh, those this week are Reynolds, Jameson Williams, Khalil Shakir. Let me get one of those in every single lineup. And we know that these guys can airball. So, any stances on Shakir?
I think he's fine. The issue is, like you said, is you kind of, depending on who you want to play, you kind of do need one of these guys in most lineups. But I would just be monitoring the roster percentage report pretty closely and just trying to dictate, let that dictate how you handle it. These guys are all, like you said, very capable of airballing. And honestly, last week, Khalil Shakir kind of looked like he was on pace to do that, then ended up having the touchdown. So, yeah, they're all somewhat thin, but I totally get it from a price point standpoint. I just don't want to go into where the roster percentage is with those guys.
All right, give me your Vegas take.
Dude, taking the Chiefs, man. I think the Chiefs win this game.
I'm going to take the Bills.
Love it.
Yeah, why not?
A little head-to-head.
Yeah, let's do it.
Prop it like it's hot.
If you want to get all of our props, you can get them in the DFS Pass, dfspass.com. It costs you $0. So you know, you could do it if you want to. Betts famously said about, I don't know, 5 minutes ago that if this player buries me, he buries me. But what he really meant to say is that if he buries you, you also get to bury everyone else because you're taking his under.
That's exactly what I said. I'm taking Diggs under 64.5 receiving yards. He has been under this line in 7 of his last 10 games and now faces a Chiefs defense that's held opposing wide receivers to the fewest yards per game since week 14. Only 3 wide receivers all year have hit this mark. And like you said, you know, they want to run. They've been very run heavy at home. Makes sense to me to go under. He just hasn't done it.
I'm going to be talking about Aaron Jones, somebody I loved last week. I will take the under of his rushing plus receiving line, which is right now at 89.5. You can get that on Underdog as well. Let me just say this. Aaron Jones is a great player. Aaron Jones is 29 years old. And to expect a player to go over this mark for the 5th game in a row on the road against San Francisco, that's pretty tough. Over the course of the season, only 3 running backs went over this mark. Kyron hit 100. Jerome Ford, Uncle Jerome, your boy, hit it at 91, so barely over. And then Joe Mixon in week 8 went for 110. So nobody has hit this mark since week 8 against the 49ers. James Conner got close, but I think this is a clear line. You look at his other, you know, other markets out there, his receptions total is under the 3.5. It's at minus 150. His rush attempts is under 16.5 at minus 120. His receiving yards, same thing, under. Like, the markets are kind of saying, like, I don't expect a ton of volume for this player this week in a, 10-point dog environment. So 89.5 is a pretty high line to hit.
It is. I get it. I mean, it totally is like a median outcome versus ceiling performance standpoint. Like, this doesn't mean you can't play him in DFS, because when you play him in DFS, you're hoping he goes for 100 yards total and scores twice. But I think more times than not, he probably comes in under this line in this spot.
Yeah. No, I don't love it. I don't love it in the sense of going against a player alike, but I think it makes a lot of sense to go that direction. If you want to play with us, go to ballersdfs.com. You can get our DraftKings League, Fantasy Footballers, DFS, Borg, and Betts. We got some weekend contest. If you want to put some money on the line, you know, win some money for your family, say, hey, it's playoffs. They're going to say, oh, I thought the NFL was over. You're like, no, honey, it's still there, and I'm just making money for you, honey. So make sure you go to ballersdfs.com if you want to be a part of that. Betts, tell everyone bye.
Well said, Kyle. Well said. Yeah, man, fun weekend coming up. We got 4 games. They should be great. Enjoy them. We're back next week for conference championships. But like Kyle said, ballersdfs.com, dfspass.com. Good luck this weekend, and let's just hope Stephon Diggs is furious. What do you say?
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at thefantasyfootballers.com.